The following program is sponsored by Benveo.
This is Mind Your Business with Dr. Mark Lewandowski on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
Spreading the excitement of entrepreneurial growth all over Oklahoma.
Whether you want to start a business or grow a business, Dr. Mark is your go-to expert.
This show is all about you, and it starts right now.
On News 102.3 KRMG.
Hello, Oklahoma. Welcome to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski. This is the show that's all about you, the entrepreneur in the state of Oklahoma doing amazing things. I'm so glad you joined, and I think you're going to be glad you joined today, too, because today, all we're going to talk about is you. We're going to talk about how you can become more creative. What if I were to tell you how you could start your day out every day being a more creative and successful person? Wouldn't that be fantastic? We're going to talk about that. We're going to get started immediately. But right before we get started, I want to tell you, I want a special thank you to our host, Benveo. Benveo is a third-party administrator here in Tulsa, and they are slammed because people are making modifications in the way that they handle their health care coverage, their insurance coverage for health care, for themselves and their employees. So if you're an employer and you've got between 200 and 500 employees and you're trying to figure out, how do I compete in this unbelievably competitive marketplace in my industry and still be able to afford to pay for healthcare coverage for my employees, then that's the company for you. It's Benveo, B-E-N-V-E-O. Call Jonathan at Benveo. He can help you. There are a host of opportunities and solutions for you and your employees. So thank you, Benveo, for that sponsorship. We appreciate you so much. Now let's get back to you. Let's get back to you, the entrepreneur that wants to be more creative. Maybe you're not an entrepreneur yet, but you listen to the show and you're thinking, yes, I would like to be more creative. You know, too often we see success stories of people that get up at 4:30, they have their coffee, they read the newspaper, they head out to the office by 5:30, they're there by 6:10. They do certain things. They're very pattern-based, full of habits, and full of structure. But I will tell you that patterns, habits, and structure are not, I repeat, not the foundation of creativity. Years ago, I had a friend that was a professor at the University of Tulsa. His name was Dr. Tim Peterson, and he had been an amazingly successful person in the military and was moving up, up, up. And finally, he was in line to be a general and had to make a decision about whether he was going to be a general or was he going to go into academia and study creativity like I had studied. And so he and I became friends because we both did our PhDs in management with an emphasis in creativity and idea generation. Well, it was Tim Peterson that showed me a thing called the success-failure cycle. And it was really amazing because it radically changed the way I perceived successes based on patterns, habits, and structure. See, so many books I had read were about entrepreneurs or successful business people that had a lot of good habits. And I thought to myself, you really need habits to be successful. You need to get up at 5:30, read the paper, leave the office or leave the house by 6:15, be at the office by 7, work a long, hard day. But those weren't necessarily the things that made for the greatest amount of successes. In fact, according to the Tim Peterson success-failure cycle, It is those habits, patterns, and structure that in many cases eliminate your creativity. So today we're going to talk a little bit about that success-failure cycle. So let's imagine that you are starting a business and you have a great success. You're like, wow, that was amazing. We did so well. That was incredible, the successes. It is normal human behavior to look backwards and try to figure out what it was that made me successful. What did I do that created that success? And so we're looking for patterns. And then our next logical human behavior is to try to turn those patterns into a habit and create those habits into part of our daily structure. So think about it this way. Let's say that I'm a baseball player and I am struggling at the plate. and I really got to start making some hits and getting some success at the plate. And so I decide this time when I go into the plate and go into the batter's box that I'm going to dig in with my right foot, and I'm going to spin that foot 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I'm going to shake my hips, and then I'm going to wait for the pitch. And all of a sudden, a great pitch comes and I hit it. Now, too many baseball players get into these patterns and habits as part of their structure, and they dig into the box every time, and they stick their right foot and they swivel it 3 times. 1, 2, 3. And then they swivel their hips and hope that that pattern is going to be what creates their success. But you and I know from a logical perspective that a baseball player who digs into the batter's box with their right foot 3 times and then shakes their hips, that is in no way what made them successful. What made them successful was all the effort it took to get up in the morning, to go for a run, to do the workout, to go into the batting cage and hit, to change, to modify their swing, to open up their stance so they could see the ball better. These kinds of things are what really created the success. See, folks, it's effort that creates success. When we are experiencing business a lack of success and we're wanting to move towards success, it's really the effort to change, the effort to modify, the effort to get better. Those are the things. It is effort that makes success. Today, we're going to talk about purposefully having an effort to modify your morning, to set you up to be more creative every day. Now, wouldn't you love to be more creative every day? I know I would. Every day, I'd like to be more and more creative. So in studying creativity and studying the most creative and innovative people, I had the great opportunity to study creativity in my PhD and then go on and be part of the innovation program at Stanford University. And everywhere you go where there are people that are super creative, they start their day out setting their mindset to being more creative. So today I'm going to teach you or talk to you or share with you 3 things that I think you should do every day to get started being a more creative person. Now, down the road, we'll talk a little bit more about what we can do the rest of the day, but for today alone, we're going to talk about starting out being more creative. How can you create a morning environment that sets your mind in an environment of change? The first thing I would do is to tell you to take your time in the morning. Too many of us sleep in, set the snooze, hit the snooze again, hit the snooze a third time, and maybe the fourth time. Then we jump up, run to the kitchen, grab a cup of coffee, run back to our bathroom, start the shower process, and start doing as quickly as we can all of our morning duties to get ready to run out the door. We've blown it from the very beginning. From the very beginning of our part of our day, we should be taking our time in the morning. Why? One of the most important reasons is that the morning stimulates the brain. And for those of you who listen to the show many times, your brain is divided into your left hemisphere and your right hemisphere and tied in the middle by your corpus callosum. And what we really need to be doing is that we need to, in the morning, be stimulating both right side and left side of the brain activity. If you happen to be one of those persons that gets on the treadmill or goes for a walk in the morning, you'll know and you'll tell me and you'll agree that your morning is the most creative time. See, when you stimulate by moving around and taking your time and going for a walk or taking, like I'm going to recommend today, a very nice long shower, what you're doing is you're stimulating both right brain and left brain activity. So left brain activity is where you store all your linear functions. I got to get this done and that done, and I got to finish that contract. Before I finish that contract, I've got to make sure I check on those 2 items. So that's all the linear. The right side of your brain contains all the relationship items, the creativity part of your brain. So when you take your time in the morning and you take your extra time in the shower and you brush your teeth using both hands and you stand up and you walk around or you go for a walk, or maybe you take your coffee out in the backyard and look at your plants and do what we call a botanical, where you walk around and look at all your plants, that's when you're going to get your best ideas. Start your morning out in a very creative way. Next, number 2, take a different path to work. change roads. Don't park in the same spot every day. Now, I hope you're lucky enough to have your own parking space, but not everybody does. So take a new road, change parking spaces, and if you happen to work at home, start your day out in a different chair than your normal chair. And number three, if you're going to change your mindset and you're going to be a more creative person, start to journal your successes in the morning. Take out a little notebook and every morning write a very positive statement like, I am going to be creative and innovative today in the way I handle new challenges. I do that every morning. I set my mindset to what I'm going to accomplish or the kind of person I'm going to be. Take your time getting ready. Take a new path to work. Start your day out journaling about what kind of person you're going to be. And all of those things will start you on the process of change. I'm so excited about today's guest. In just a moment, when we come back, we're going to have the president of Crossroads Hospice, Mr. Perry Farmer, one of the most creative people I've ever met in my life. This is the Mind Your Business Show on News 102.3 KRMG. Welcome back to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski. This is the show that's all about you, the entrepreneur in Oklahoma, doing amazing things. And it's just going to be a great day. And the reason it's going to be a great day is that we have one of the most impressive entrepreneurs in Oklahoma in the last few years. Here's what's so crazy about this. This entrepreneur, in our entrepreneur showcase, this gentleman is what I call a quiet entrepreneur. A quiet entrepreneur is that person that has a really big, growing, going concern, and very few people have heard of him. And the reason is because they launched their business out of Tulsa, and it's all over the country. You know, if you've been listening to me, I talk all the time about you as an entrepreneur having an impact not only in your community, not only in the region, not only in the state, but you can launch a business out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and have it grow nationally. Today, I've got a very special guest, a gentleman named Perry Farmer, who is the president of Crossroads Hospice, and one of the owners of Care for Associates. Perry, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Mind Your Business Show. Oh,
thank you. I'm excited.
Perry, where did you grow up?
I grew up kind of all over. Maybe that's kind of led to my personality, but I started in Sallisaw, Oklahoma, a little town south of here, and then moved to San Francisco, and I lived there from third grade till I was a junior in high school, and then came back to Sallisaw for my junior and senior year.
Now, you came back to Sallisaw, and you guys won the state championship in football. Is that right?
That is probably the reason I came back.
That's right.
Was they had won one, and I wanted, and my uncle had a ring. I want one of those, and so that may be a little. I don't want to tell my parents that that's why I moved back. But
okay, and then you stayed here, and you went to college to a little college that you're really proud of. Tell me about that.
Boomer, baby. Yeah.
So you're a Sooner.
I am a Sooner.
Okay,
Sooner.
We've had them all. We've had all sorts of people here on the show.
Well, I enjoyed my time probably a little too much at the University of Oklahoma, and when they kicked me out, I was, well, am I a doctor? Am I a lawyer? And they said, oh, no, you're not. you're a marketer. I said, okay, I can do that.
You were invited to leave the University of Oklahoma at one point.
I actually was foolish enough to do self-counseling, and I had thought I graduated. But they never did invite me for a cap and gown ceremony. And I thought, well, that's fine. I don't need to walk across the stage. I know I've done it. And then I was applying for – this is embarrassing. I was applying for a job, and they said, well, you're a college graduate. I said, yes, sir. And well, we'll need your diploma. And I said, well, funny thing, that thing never did come in the mail. And so I called the university, and I was 3 hours short. I had miscalculated something. And so on Thursday, I found out I needed that diploma. So I had to go to the like where you can clip out of a class. So I read the textbook on pre-Civil War history. Birth of that, and then took the test that weekend and passed it and got, and so I was a graduate on that Monday for
well,
the job.
Congratulations. Yeah. Good for you. Okay, tell me a little now. You're what we call that quiet entrepreneur, that person that's done something absolutely amazing. In fact, I know that just a few years ago, you had as many as 2,400 employees in your company.
Thereabouts, yeah. And it was so exciting, and that's part, and it still is. It's still my passion. But yes, when you say quiet, most people, if they know me, then they go, quiet?
Yeah.
Where did you get that?
Quiet at all.
Yeah.
Right.
But I totally understand how you're putting that into a phrase, and I like that definition. When we started here in Tulsa, we started in a little house in Broken Arrow, 517 South Oak Avenue in Broken Arrow, and this is really where Crossroads got started. And through the years, then we had built up to be the largest hospice at that time.
Yeah, tell me a little bit. Just tell us a little bit about what you do. What is it that you guys do? And then we'll get into some of the how did you grow.
Well, how it got started was I had graduated OU, and I want to come back just a little bit because it kind of leads into that. Graduated OU, I was marketing, and at that time we had our first oil glut, so prices went way down. And of course, in Oklahoma, everybody's excited that they're paying 70 cents a gallon, but if you're an advertiser, money is no longer there to spend on advertising, and so it was either leave the state or change professions. My family had been in long-term care, so I was young enough, and a gentleman gave me some advice. He said, Perry, you should, if you want to do long-term care, you need to become a nurse's aide. And so I started as a nurse's aide at Lackey Manor in Oklahoma City, then became a CMA. I was ward clerk. Computers hit the nursing home, so I was the assistant DON.
Yeah, now this is how, if I remember your story, this is really how you made the big splash.
Right.
Computers came into nursing homes, and the nursing home management,
right.
Really, they weren't computer savvy, especially PC.
Well,
and
yeah.
And you became the guy.
I became the guy, and I was hand scoring and utilizing the computer. I think they had a 1-800-HELP number, and I think I'm the one that busted that because I was saying this is – I'm hand scoring using the computer. They're not coming up with the same automatic triggers and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I wasn't afraid to turn the computer on, which put me far in front. You know, and so they said, well, if you're right. not afraid to press the on button, you come sit in this office. So that was really my start. And then went to administrator school. I was the youngest administrator in the state at a time. And that was really where I fell in love with health care and care
okay,
for the elderly.
Time out just a minute. Mm-hmm. How old were you when you became an administrator?
24.
So you're a 24-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And hospital administration or nursing home administration, that's perceived to be Ivy Leaguers or older people, people that have a lot of hospital experience. You were in there at 24 years old. How dare you? How dare you be so arrogant as to think you could run a nursing home at 24?
Well, what was funny, it's now, it was in Collinsville, just up the road. It's now Francis Drive, but back then it was Collinsville Manor. And yes, they had actually painted over the word administrator and put kid. So, but it was,
how did you handle that criticism?
I embraced it. I've had more fun in long-term care. If you're having a bad day, just go talk to the residents. They are absolutely fantastic. We had employee Olympics. We had weight loss goals. We had fairs out in the front yard. Collinsville Manor had a beautiful porch and a front yard. We had, you know, fairs where the residents could, hit us with pies. We just had a ball. And I think a lot of it had to do with being young, going, why not? You know, this it doesn't have to be. This is their place. This is their home. Let's have fun.
You know, I love the idea of the why not. The idea that says, hey, why can't we do this?
Right.
What if? I love these two words, what if and why not?
Exactly.
Those are the kinds of things that have caused you and I to be entrepreneurs, serial entrepreneurs, where
Absolutely.
We think about there is not a single thing we can't do.
Perfectly said.
Now, there was that point at which you said, okay, I've had enough of this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go into this thing called hospice.
Well, and that all came from an experience in long-term care where a hospice had come in. They had actually caused me several deficiencies, and so I was reading a book. I was actually going to try to, and it's kind of the thing in an entrepreneur is that you gotta cover your own
rear end. Yeah,
there you
that's
go.
Right.
All right, so
this is a family show.
Right, thank you. So we'll keep it at rear end. And so when I got those deficiencies back then, nobody knew what. They had just started talking about $10,000 a day fines, and I had no idea what this was going to mean. So I was trying to read about what should a hospice do, and that's when I fell in love. My wife was 3 months pregnant, and I resigned.
Oh, my goodness. So we're going to come right back after this break. I've got to hear the end of the story, and everyone listening to it has got to hear this. You are listening to the show, the Innovation and Entrepreneur Show on KRMG. It's the Mind Your Business Show. We'll be right back. We're back to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski. This is the show that's all about you, the entrepreneur in Oklahoma. And if you missed the earlier section, if you're just tuning in, you're in for a real surprise. We've got a special guest today in our entrepreneur showcase, a gentleman, a Tulsa resident who grew up in Salisaw and also in San Francisco, went to the University of Oklahoma. His name is Perry Farmer, and he's what I call a quiet entrepreneur. He's that guy that everyone knows and loves, but they have no idea what he does for a living, and they have no idea that his company has 2,400 employees. Perry, thank you for being here. We're so happy
that
you're here.
Thank you.
When we left, you were talking about that you got out of school and went into the nursing home business, the long-term care. And you were just about to tell us how you went from long-term care into hospice. I got to hear that story. Tell us about that.
To kind of recap, the hospice that was serving in my nursing home had caused us many deficiencies. And so I was reading a book called The Hospice Philosophy by Sandahl Stoddard. And about chapter three, everything I had done in my life seemed to be calling, if I can use that word, to that point. My wife was 3 months pregnant, and at that point I said, you know, I've got to quit my job. I have to start a hospice. didn't know come here from Sikkim about any of it. Had we been a little bit sharper, just a little bit more intelligent, I probably could have easily figured out that just calling the National Hospice Organization, they had a policy procedure manual for $750. And I probably could have done that. And there we would have just started hospice because this is how you hospice. But I wasn't that bright. And so I just started sitting in my breakfast nook and started writing. Here's what should happen when the phone rings. This is what we should be doing. And just worked all the way through to develop a kind of a unique look at hospice. And since that time, we've expanded from, we started in Tulsa, that was 1995 is when that happened. And then in 1996, we got our license. So February of 1996.
Okay, I want to back up just a moment. So let me clarify. Your wife was 3 months pregnant.
Yes.
You were a 24-year-old.
Well, not at that time.
You were a little older.
I was a little bit older.
But you weren't 50.
No, I was 28.
Okay, you were 28 years old.
Yeah.
Your wife's 3 months pregnant.
Yes.
And you quit your job to start a new company in which you don't know anything about it.
Right.
And you didn't get the manual.
It sounds worse when you say it.
And you sat, I think if I know the story correctly, you sat at a booth in Shoney's and that was your office.
Yes.
And you wrote an entire program of how to run a hospice without knowing anything about it.
Right. Basically, we were given at that time, Oklahoma statutes had about 14 pages of things you do if you're a hospice. It was front and back, but certainly much less than long-term care. So I thought, well, if I can do long-term care, I can certainly do this. Had no idea, but had a vision and a dream of this should be the experience. Right. So in long-term care, I had certain experiences, and through the guidelines of how that industry is regulated and what you're supposed to do and what OBRA law, this is a new Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1992, where that took us. And it was all great except for understanding and being a little bit more patient-centric and understanding everything about the end of life. And it's really a shame. And one of our very first physicians used to say that, you know, in the Orient, dying is you have to die to go achieve the next step. You know, in Europe, it was when you die, if you lived your life right, the news was pretty good. If you did not, the news was really, really bad. And then in America, it seemed to be an option. Right. We're not planning for end of life. We're not talking about that. There's no true informed consent. There's none of this is being talked about end of life care. So it doesn't really exist. And in nursing homes, it's just illegal. You can't die in a nursing home. There's a lawsuit coming and you didn't do this and do that. So it's a concept of what do we do at the end of life that was really starting to drive my what I was thinking about at the time.
So your motivation was really, you really wanted end of life to be a different experience.
Absolutely.
You wanted it to be something more beautiful, something more precious, something more natural, instead of that fist fight all the way to the end where they die without dignity and they die suffering, they die without family, they die in a nursing home instead of their home.
Nursing home can be their home.
And you were just arrogant enough, and I use that in the very, we talk about this all the time in the show, that a real entrepreneur believes in the face of everything else, they can do it better than the others.
Absolutely. And, and I do agree with that word. Maybe it is arrogance. And there was a time when we first expanded, one of the cities was Atlanta, Georgia. And the gentleman there, one of the physicians said, "How could you possibly come to Georgia? We already have this." And it was like, that doesn't matter to me that you already have a hospice in Atlanta or 19 or 20 or how many ever. I'm coming. And he said, "Well, you're just like a maverick." And I went, "Oh, I kind of like that word." That was kind of fun. I like that.
So what I know is I think you have 12 locations, it's 11 or 12 sites, mm-hmm. Cleveland, Akron, Dayton, Cincinnati, Memphis, Atlanta.
Yeah, we have 11 main sites and then another 3 that are satellites around 2 of those others.
How do you go about selecting a city for growth? You say, okay, we've got to grow. We got to go. We can't do it all in Tulsa. It can't all be Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Ardmore. Right. We've got to go to some of these bigger cities because we have this model of patient care for the dying that needs to be expanded. It's almost like a mission that you have.
Absolutely.
And by the way, on this show, we don't talk about religion or politics, which you and I can talk about in the side and we'll laugh about that. But it's almost like a mission, a calling to go to Atlanta or to go to Memphis or mm-hmm. to go to Cleveland. Tell me, how did you pick those sites? What are the requirements of a site? How do you go about expanding?
We used to utilize a formula. And we called this the NFPCI kind of index. And this looked at everything from population of the city, number of hospitals, number of nursing homes, cancer deaths. And so all this kind of worked into a score. And that score then could be applied in any major metropolitan area. We started looking at areas over 1 million because that was really what we were finding was that in our model, that was really kind of the minimum number. Certainly we've succeeded in towns smaller than that, but that was really our first little hurdle to go over. Once we started doing that, then we kind of found that it wasn't always 1 million, that some of our sites flourished if they were at 300,000 or something like that. And then it became, okay, well, maybe that's not the number. Maybe it should be totally based on the quality of the golf courses and casinos around the city.
There's a long pause there.
Where do you want to go? Okay.
Oh my goodness! Where do you? If we're good at pick a city, let's pick a nice one.
Might as well pick one that's fun. So that's a joke, but it was kind of interesting. Is that as we started expanding and as we started meeting new people, somebody would always have a contact. There would always be some reason to go to this city, and that would be maybe that circle of influence was okay. They've experienced this here. They have a doctor. They have they have nursing homes. You know, whatever the connection may have been, most of them were personal that at least brought us initially to, hey, would Cincinnati be a good town? Would Philadelphia be a good town? Then we would run the NFPCI index.
Let's go back to that index for just a moment.
Sure.
So did the index exist or did you create it?
We created it.
So tell me about the elements of that. If you're an entrepreneur and you're listening to this show and you're thinking about expanding, one of the things you might say to yourself is, I don't know what criteria that I would use to select the next site. And so many people would look for other people to craft that criteria, to build that index on their behalf. Mm-hmm. But you and your partners created an index of your own. Tell me about those elements and were there elements that you found weren't as important?
Yeah, we found at the end of the day, our program was so different and unique that the index itself became non-existent. It we didn't even use it on the last 3 sites, right? So it was just, but in the beginning, I would think that anybody, and taking it out of my context and just applying it to anybody trying to start, and there's some basic rules about growing a business across a country or across a state. It depends on, you know, what is your vision? How is it going to be duplicatable, right? So the duplication, if you can't duplicate yourself, then how can it possibly grow? So when we started looking at, if I'm looking at a customer base, then obviously if we're talking hospice, we're talking mostly Medicare. You know, we're talking 65 and older. If we're talking 6 months from death, we're talking about long-term care. 25% of every person will spend some time in a long-term care facility. So, and that was my background. So obviously I was primarily focused in long-term care and helping nursing homes achieve, you know, more satisfaction and better patient care. That was my goal from the beginning.
So what you're saying too, in tying it to our show, we talk all the time about value propositions, and you and I discuss this all the time about what is it that you're bringing to the market that makes you unique. You found that as you grew and as you became a, you differentiated yourself by how you provided patient care and what your model was, then the mathematics, the algorithms, the criteria for your selection of a location weren't as important because you had something radically different to bring to the market.
Absolutely. So experience, you have to start with some way to identify a market. You have to, you know, what is it? If you're selling suntan lotion, you don't want to be in the North Pole. You know, I'm sure you get UV rays there too. But whatever the deal is, that's the start. But then it all becomes about what is it that actually provides the differentiation.
Okay, we're going to talk about that differentiation right after we come back. We're going into a break. This is a very special show. We've got a wonderful guest, Perry Farmer, president of Crossroads Hospice and partner at Care4, and we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski. We've got a very special guest. If you've been listening, you have had a great time listening. It's Perry Farmer from Crossroads Hospice. He's the president. He is a quiet entrepreneur. Here's a guy that's doing great things all over the nation, and he has grown his company from just himself sitting in a booth at Shoney's to 2,400 employees all over the nation, and we're going to get with him in just a moment. I want to say a special thank you to our host, Ben Vail. Ben Vail is a third-party administrator in Tulsa, and they provide healthcare services to a host of different companies, everybody from one or two employees all the way to 2,400. In fact, Crossroads Hospice and Care4 is a client of Ben Vail. So, Perry, thanks for helping Ben Vail be so successful.
Well, thank Ben Vail for helping us stay afloat.
You know, we talk about all the time in this show that it is one of the most challenging things to deal with in running a business is how do you afford to provide healthcare services to your employees? And you've got 2,400 of them.
Yes.
And you're paying for very high-level healthcare insurance because you've got to attract really good people, and you're pulling them away from clinics, hospitals, surgery centers, right, where they've got great benefits. So thanks for being a client for so long of Ben Vail.
Thank you.
Let's jump back into you. Right. We've been talking about differentiation, and you built your company on a differentiation strategy. You did not follow the crowd.
Right.
You went your own way.
Absolutely. So differentiation to me, because I had the marketing background and I've been involved in long-term care, and I knew exactly where basically we wanted to go. Now that changes. You know, we get better every day. I'm 10 times better of a hospice person now than I was in 1995, without a doubt. And that comes through experience, knowledge, just trial and error. But I will say that differentiation follows a path of something that at Crossroads I kind of developed. This is going to sound really egotistical, but I'll go ahead and tell you. You know, in school, we're taught about the four P's: promotion, price, placement, and product. I really think that anything that I've ever wanted to do or that will do in the future revolves around the three C's. And I call them the three C's of Crossroads, and that is a conviction, you know, a commitment to what you're doing, a conviction that you know that you can do it better than anybody else. The conviction, a convicted person, not in jail. I haven't... Never been.
You've not yet been convicted.
I've never been convicted.
Accused,
yes,
but not
never
convicted.
Right. But having conviction gives you that ability to persuade. I always feel that people at the end of the day, and it doesn't matter how much technology we put in between us, in between an interface or whatever, people at the end of the day buy people and they long for that connection. Now, a good website can get those people together. A marketing campaign can do all that. But really, a convicted person has the ability to persuade and to influence. And so they're committed to their product. They have conviction of what they're doing. And then they're exercising compassion, that every single person out there is coming with their own ideals, with their own beliefs, and being able to be compassionate about how do you see the world, how do you see yourself, and being able then to translate. So it's only through that empathy that you can have for others, that being able to see yourself in their shoes, that drives that. So if you have those things, then differentiation becomes about what are you passionate about? What about you and your company gives you the conviction that you could stand up on the top of the stairs in Washington, D.C. and shout it at the top of your lungs, or in the corner in Southside, Oklahoma, right? It just what is it about you? And so all that differentiation, if you're passionate about it, then your differentiation of your product needs to reflect that. It does no good to be passionate about something and then not follow through with utilizing your passion to give your unique. And we talked about this a lot, you know, in other areas, is that the difference is you. No, there are, you know, 92 hospices in Oklahoma City. There's 89 in Tulsa. What makes each one of them different? And it's the person there. It's the person that's driving the ship. What is it about you then that makes it different?
Now, there's a lot of discussion, and I agree completely about conviction and compassion and all the things that make Crossroads so unique. But at the same time, as an expert in marketing, and I really perceive you as an expert in branding, mm-hmm. you've got to share that message, and people have to identify the quality of the organization by other things like what people look like, what are the materials. I know you guys have selected a color. Talk a little bit about branding. We don't have a lot of time, but I've got to have you touch on branding.
Well, branding is, I think, where most people may miss the boat, is that they think branding is a logo. It's a jingle. It's a song. It's true. It can be all of those things. But at the end of the day, the brand is a promise. And so in any essence, in any contact with any potential customer, with any growth, what are they getting from the message that's relaying the promise of your differentiation, of your commitment, of your conviction, of your compassion? What is that? And so we can do that through color. Our color is supposed to be spa-like. It was supposed to be tranquil. It was supposed to relay a comfortness just in a color. Then the actual logo represented reaching your highest human achievement. You know, what can you be? This is what we can offer you.
Would you be so kind sometime to come back on the show and just visit with me about branding?
That's going to be two or three shows.
I see this. I see it all the time, in that people have they've got a great idea, they've got real passion, they get to market and they just look terrible. And right. The look and the feel, the communication of that compassion, that excitement doesn't come across to the marketplace because they haven't done all the things they need to do.
Right.
Perry, I'm so grateful that you are here. Thank you so much. I want to remind everybody that there are more people like Perry, very few of them, but there are more people like Perry that we've recorded in these shows. And you're going to find all that content on drmarklew.com on our webpage. Thanks again for Ben Vail, and thanks to KRMG. This is the Mind Your Business Show on News 102.3 KRMG.